Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is Mac, and you're listening to Mac's Musings. My guest tonight is Dennis Daniel. He is a writer, director, producer, DJ, voiceover artist.
Hello.
Hello, Dennis.
Yes.
This is Mac, and we are live on the air.
Live on the air?
Yes, we are.
Overture, turn the lights. This is it, the night of nights. And all what heights will hit. On with the show, this is it.
Sorry.
Very good. Actually, I was just telling people while the phone was dialing that you're a voiceover artist, and you just proved it.
Oh!
You proved me right.
There you go. Yes, sir. Well, among many other things, but yeah, do a lot of voiceovers.
Oh, well, yeah, I did mention some things like, you know, you're a writer, a director, a producer, a DJ. You also sing.
Yes. Wow, you know more about me than I do. That's pretty good. Wow. Sounds like a really interesting guy.
Yeah, he does, doesn't he? Maybe I should call him up and get him on the show.
He might make a good guest. I mean, you know, even though nobody really knows who the fuck he is, but that's okay. This is why you do shows, so people learn.
That's exactly right. I mean, sometimes I get pretty famous people on the show, but other times there are people that are just starting out. Although I don't think you're just starting out, but
no, I've been doing this since I'm 18 and I'm 63, so I'm far from just starting out. But I call what I have low budget celebrity. The people who want it. No, not at all. The people who know who I am know who I am, and the ones that don't bother me when I'm at the deli. You know. So it's nice. It's nice, you know, it really is. I've been lucky. Seriously, all kidding aside, I've been very lucky because I've been doing this in one way, shape, or form or another, as I say, since I'm 18 years old. But, you know, over time, you can get an audience if you are in the right place at the right time. You know, everything I've ever done has always been mass media oriented, so all of the creative outlets that I have been involved in, you know, everything from you know, being a disc jockey to being a producer to being a director, you know, to being in advertising to being on television shows, you know, what have you, all about the media. So that's a good feeling in my heart that I know that somehow or other something I did touch somebody in some way. They may not even know who I am, but then, you know, there might be some who do. Fame is a fleeting thing, but be that as it may, it's nice. You know, I have people that enjoy my work that, you know, like the way I write, and I feel very, very lucky, you know, and then people like yourself who are interested in anything I have to say, because I still, after all these years of doing it, I still marvel that people give a shit what I have to say. But fire away, man. Fire away. Ask your questions.
Well, one of the things that I was, you know, hoping that you would share with whatever audience we have, I have a little bit of an audience, not a gigantic one, so hopefully you weren't hoping for that.
No, it doesn't really matter, you know, because it doesn't matter. The size of the audience doesn't matter because, if you touch just one human being, you've done something with your night, you know. So I don't care. You know, I've talked to a million people. I've talked to two people. It doesn't matter to me. I'm honored that you care to have me on your program. So go ahead.
Well, yeah, I just like to say that to some people because some people in it's like, okay, if that's what you expect, that's not what you're getting. But I do have an audience, and I have had people contact me and let me know how much they enjoyed somebody's episode or and asked me questions about them afterwards. I've introduced people to other people. That's one of the things I do. But getting back to you.
Well, it's wonderful. Wonderful. It's wonderful. Absolutely wonderful, brother. Absolutely wonderful. I love it.
Well, getting
That's
back
great.
To you.
Okay.
Whoever may be listening.
Yeah, whoever.
Also,
yeah, and remember, if you have any questions about me, you contact Matt later. Let him know.
Okay. So if you wouldn't mind telling the listeners something about how you grew up, because I believe you live in New York. Tell us about growing up in New York, how your love of films got cultivated, and the other things that you do, DJing, singing, and all that. Take as much time as you want. This is an hour show.
Well, that's a very tremendously broad and long-winded type question. So, good thing you opened the floor to me. Make sure you got a chair and a blankie, and you know a pillow in case you need it, because I could be here for a few days. To do the proverbial quote Reader's Digest version unquote. I was born. I grew up and I started doing shit and I'm still doing it now. So that's pretty much it. That's the whole story. But growing up on Long Island was wonderful. You know, I was born in Queens, but my parents, moved to Long Island when I was just a wee little nugget. And so I grew up on Long Island and, you know, in a very middle class kind of environment. You know, a lot of friends got involved right away with creative things. Just was, you know, part of who I was. I hung out with creative people, so that helped. And there were opportunities to do creative things in high school, I was in the plays and the shows, and you know, I had a filmmaking class there. We made movies with Super 8 sound. It was great. You know, it was wonderful. Really got me excited to go to college. And I also had a radio show at the college. It was funny because the first college I went to was called Dowling College. And it was a very staid sort of frumpy old institution, you know, with a very dry and... boring educational people, you know, Dowling. Yes, I went to Dowling, you know. So it was not a very, you know, exciting place creatively, but my father wanted me to go there because he taught there. So he wanted me to do my first year of humanities at Dowling, you know, and then I could go to whatever college I wanted. So I figured, what the hell, all right. I mean, you know, that particular subject's the same no matter what college you go to. You have to go through that the first year anyway, so I'll do it at Dowling. And one day I was sitting in the cafeteria, and I heard there was a radio station for the college. And I asked around because my father taught there and he knew the people I needed to ask, and found out that it was just a radio station that played in the college, in the dorms and in the buildings and in the, you know, the college campus. It was the college campus radio station. And I met the guy that was running it, who was just, you know, they were doing it for fun. They didn't have any radio courses at the school or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Just doing it for fun. And I said, well, I'd love to do a show, you know, it would be great. And I said, I got a great idea for a show. He says, I'm really into the Beatles. And I have all kinds of bootlegs and crazy stuff that people normally would never hear. And I could do like a Beatles show. And what's more, I could do it as the Beatles. I know so much about the Beatles that I could pretend, and of course people will know I'm not one of the Beatles, but how funny would it be to have some disc jockey that's talking like the Beatles about the songs, you know? Yeah, this is John Lennon. I wrote Dear Prudence in 1968 when we went to India, and I was with the Maharishi and, you know, Mia Farrow's sister, Prudence. You know, we would go to meditate, and she wouldn't come with us. She wanted to stay in the tent, and we'd say, it's such a beautiful day, dear. Come on, Prudence, come on out. Come out and play. You know? So The guy looked at me like I was out of my fucking mind. You know, he said, you know something? That's such a great idea. I'm going to give you my show.
Nice.
So that's what I did, you know, and that gave me the radio bug, and that gave me the, you know, I mean, I would go there on the weekends, Mac, and I would, you know, this is the days before CDs. This is 1979. I would go there, and I would have, and the radio station was in the basement of one of the buildings there. I would go there with two gigantic suitcases filled with albums. These things weighed like 2 tons. And I'd have to take them out of my car, and I'd have to drag them down into the radio station into the depths of this building. And I would stay on the air on the weekends all day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd be on the air like 8 or 9 hours. I was in love with it. I absolutely was in love with it. And I figured that's what I want to do with my life. I want to be in radio. This is it, man. This is like, duck to water. I just did it. And so I decided to go to a college that was more media-oriented, which was New York Tech, also on Long Island in Westbury. And while I was going to the college, I was working at a Taco Bell. And at the Taco Bell, I used to do all my crazy, funny voices to make all the girls laugh and, you know, try to get laid, you know. So one time there was this traveling manager who was there, and he said I was introduced to him by my manager because, you know, they had like districts, you know, like people would be district managers. They were in charge of 7 stores or whatever. Mm-hmm. So this district manager comes in. I never met him before. And the owner says, hey, John, this is Dennis. You know, he's one of our employees. He's really funny. He does all these great voices. Go ahead, do some voices for him, you know. So I started doing voices and crazy stuff. You know, I did a lot of voices from the kind of shows and the kinds of things that were going on when I was growing up. It's like, I mean, how old are you?
Me? I'm the same age as you. Oh, well, except you're a couple of weeks older than I am.
All right, great. So you know, I was doing like, you know, the only reason I'm asking is you sound young, but the reason why, you know, is because, you know, sometimes you talk about shows like All in the Family or The Honeymooners or things of that nature. And people don't know what the hell you're talking about. They never watched them. But those are the voices I used to do, you know. Oh, we did some home there. Ow, Archie, it's so wonderful to see you. Oh, jeez, you know, we get me a beer. You know, I mean, and of course, you know, it made me very popular. Norton, you get down here now. Norton, hey, Norton. I'll be right there, Ralphie boy. You know, I mean, you know. So, I, and I would do Star Trek. Captain's log, Stardate 4.7373. It is a time when people talk on podcasts. 5 people listening, 7 people listening, 100 people listening. I don't know how many people are listening.
Damn it, Jim, why are we wasting our time if nobody's listening? Well, I can't get more of a signal. We haven't got enough dilithium crystals to get this podcast over to Bora Bora.
Captain, I don't think anything these men are talking about is logical.
Captain, I know we could hear it in Russia.
Captain, I think we should go full ahead, sir.
Will you stop with the sexually innuendous things? I don't want to go full ahead with you. I know you're gay, but I don't want it. I like, you know, what we call in the States, muff.
Anyway. So I would do all this crazy stuff, okay? And the guy says to me, he goes, you're fantastic. You should talk to my wife. She owns an ad agency. And that was it, Mac. That was it. I was 18 years old, my first year in college. I go and I put on a dog and pony show for this woman at the ad agency. She's blown away, and she says, hire him. And so I got hired. And those
wow.
days, you know, the ad agencies would produce commercials for local businesses, you know. So if you were going to be on, there was a radio station on Long Island called WBAB, a rock station. If you were going to be on WBAB, you could go to WBAB and record your commercial because since you're buying time on the station, they'd allow you to use their studio to create your commercial, right? So
I would, you know, when we would do spots and stuff like that, radio commercials and stuff for the ad agency, we used to go to WBAB to do it. So I went there and I met this guy named Brian Battles, who was the production director, the guy who did the commercials and stuff, and he was a disc jockey too. And we hit it off right away. And, you know, before you know it, I was hanging out with him all the time at WBAB whenever I had spare time, doing all kinds of crazy voices and nutty, crazy shit. He's still my friend to this day. And after doing all that, one thing led to another. He decided that he wanted to move to Connecticut, and I ended up getting the job. And then I stayed at WBAB for 15 years, and during that time I was a disc jockey, and I produced all the commercials. I won a Clio Award, which is like the Oscar of advertising for the work that I was doing. And, you know, I was doing really, really well. And then I got called by another radio station who wanted to pay me double, so I went and worked there for a while. And then everything changed in the radio industry. When President Clinton was around, he said, you know, radio stations don't have to, but you can own as many as you want. You know, so it went from being something where you can't, you'd have a monopoly if you owned more than one radio station, a specific signal area. He ended that. It was called deregulation. And so all these big giant conglomerates came in and bought up all the radio stations. So, you know, most the radio stations I worked for were owned by, you know, regular people. The guy who owned WBAB was a lawyer. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it became very corporate. It became very corporate, very fucked up. And I eventually didn't want to work in the industry any longer because I didn't like the way it was going. I always liked being a disc jockey. I would always do that, but I wasn't going to be a producer anymore. I figured, let me go for bigger game. If I work at an advertising agency, now you're talking, I'm going to be doing stuff that you hear everywhere, not just on one station. So that's what happened. I ended up in advertising, and, you know, to make a long story short, that's what I've been doing for most of my life. As I've been a creative director, a writer, producer, director, voiceover artist. I've done thousands and thousands of commercials. And at the same time, when I was in radio, I used to host shows and stuff, and I loved horror movies. So I hosted this show once with this author that I really liked. He and I became friends. He started a magazine called Deep Red. He asked me to write for it. And that's how I started writing about horror. I was still working in radio at the time. It was like 1985. So that's the way it's been. It's been like ever, you know, and that's what happens. You start writing for one publication, and then other ones want you to write for them. And before you know it, I was writing for like 8 or 9 different magazines. You know, and some of them are classics, like Psychotronic magazine is one of the greats. You know, when I tell people I wrote for Psychotronic, they fall on the floor in the fetal position. You know, I mean, it's like a really respected magazine. And I wrote for a whole bunch of other ones too, like that Fangoria, Film Facts, Gore Zone, yada yada yada, a whole bunch. And so I had sort of like a double career, and then I even got to be a zombie in the remake of Night of the Living Dead because I had made friends with Tom Savini, and Tom asked me to be in the movie, so it was great. I got to be a flesh-eating zombie, and there's another guy named Roy Frumkes who did a movie called Street Trash. He's been my friend for over 35 years, and he always gets me involved in his film projects. I've appeared in them, you know, I've acted in them, I've, you know, helped him behind the scenes, assistant direct, and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, so, fast forward, I had about a 20-year gap where I just stopped writing about horror. A lot of things changed. I was changing, whatever. But there's been a recent boon. I had gotten a call in 2013 from this young man named John Spoonar, who got my number through Roy Frumkes because he met him somehow, and he said that I was his favorite writer, and why wasn't I writing anymore, and my writing changed his life and all this stuff. And he was doing a book called Xerox Ferox, which was a celebration of all the people that wrote for all the 80s and 90s horror publications, you know, the underground publications, the overground publications, you know, what have you. It's a big book. It's like 700 pages. He interviews everybody. He interviews me, a whole bunch of other people. And once he interviewed me, it kind of sparked my interest again in wanting to write about stuff.
The publisher who did Deep Red was putting it out again. The original guy who did it, my friend Chaz, who asked me to join it, he passed away in 2009, but they decided to revive it, you know, and his wife gave him her blessing. And so I started writing for Deep Red again. And before you know it, I was, you know, writing so much. I had so much material, I decided to do a book. So that's what I did last year. I did a book called The Horror, A Film Fanatic's Obsession with the Cinema of the Macabre. And I had so much material in that that I had enough to also create a magazine. So called Cinema, and I called the magazine Cinema Macabre. So I don't know how many issues there's going to be. You know, I just did the one. You know, maybe I'll do another one. I'm not sure. But so that's really basically it, my friend. That's how I spend my time, either writing, producing, and directing television and commercials and stuff for the internet and stuff, or writing about horror and writing books and doing all that kind of stuff. And as I say, I've got a really wonderful fan base, lots of great people. I know so many people in the industry that are my friends, and it's a lot of fun. I love it. Oh, and I'm also a Godzilla fanatic.
I wouldn't call myself a fanatic, but I do like it. I would call myself a fanatic.
I would call myself a psychotic.
Well, you know, to each his own. But don't get me wrong, I love Gojira.
And Gojira! Horiko! Gojira! Sorry.
No, that's quite all right. I'm sure that whoever's listening is enjoying it. And I'm glad you mentioned the Cinema Macabre, because that is one of the things that, you know, I was going to ask you about, but you already talked about it. So
yeah, and they're all available. You know, the best way to get them seriously now, because they've already had their first wave when they come out, so now it's kind of like the stragglers who might hear it on a podcast or something. Instead of buying it off of Amazon, buy it directly from me, because you'll pay the exact same amount you pay on Amazon, and I'll sign it for you. So if people are interested in the book or the magazine, they can contact me, I guess, via your show. You could give them your info, and if they contact you, you could pass them on to me. I'll make you the middleman. What do you think of that?
Oh, that's fine with me.
All right, cool. See, we'll put you to the test. We'll see how many people are listening to this show. We'll just see about that. Let's see how many orders I get, okay?
Now, wait a minute.
No, I'm just kidding. Actually, I'm very pleased. The book did very well, and it got wonderful reviews, wonderful 5-star reviews. People loved the thing. If you looked it up on Amazon, you'd see all these. As a matter of fact, I have like 19 5-star reviews and 1 1-star review, and I'm so happy for the 1-star review, because that means I don't walk on water, you know? But all the great reviews, and same thing with the magazine. People love the magazine, so I feel like I did something really good. You know, I put my effort and my time in it. It came out, and it did well, and people liked it. And I don't know if I'm necessarily moved to do another one, because I really, you know, it took me 4 years to get that book together. So I don't know I'm 63. I'm going to be 64 in March. I don't mean to imply that I'm too old, but it's like I've achieved so much in my life, and now after doing this, it's not like, oh, I got to have another one so I could feel this sense of achievement again. I've written 5 books, so, you know, this being my 5th and probably most personal one, except I did write a book about my years in radio, too, called Tales of the Tape. But that's the only time I've written about something other than horror. It's nice. It's nice when people read. Again, if anybody gives a shit what I have to say, it just blows me away.
Well, I do. I care what you have to say.
Well, that's very nice. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Actually, I'm sure there's a lot of people that do.
Because I'm the best. I'm the smartest. I'm the best. There's nobody better than me. Nobody's better than me. People try to be better than me. Nobody's better than me.
Well, why don't you tell the listeners about your YouTube channel? Because I know you have a YouTube channel.
Well, the YouTube channel, you know, it's another interesting little side note there, a little, you know, asterisk, is that, you know, you really have to work on a YouTube channel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like just like if you just like Instagram and just like TikTok or anything else, you got to work at it, baby. You got to be on all the time, and it's content. And I'm a very, you know, I'm a perfectionist, and I like things to look good. Like anybody can point their camera at themselves, record themselves, and throw it on YouTube. Or throw it on Instagram mm-hmm. and do movie reviews or whatever they want. Throw a couple of monster toys behind them, some wacky lighting, and you got a show, you know. So, and there's 100,000 million of them out there. So when I did mine, you know, because I work in the industry and I know, you know, I have a cinematographer, I have an editor, I have all these wonderful people. I decided to do it, you know, top notch, top rate, top line, you know, the best. Special effects, great clips from the movies, you know. But the trouble is that it takes a tremendous amount of time. These guys are doing it for me for out of the goodness of their hearts. You know, it's not like they're getting paid anything to do it. And, you know, after a lot of hard work and a lot of pushing in and promoting it as much as I can, the most views I've gotten is like 300. So I'm like, you know something? If the most I'm going to get is 300, then guess what? I'll do the videos when I feel like doing them. And I'll put them up because it's what I feel like doing. Not that I want to create a cottage industry, because it ain't going to happen. There's just too many of them. It's amazing how many interview shows there are on YouTube, especially about horror films. Some of them are great. Some of them are great. I mean, top notch, man. Great stuff. And the viewership of them proves it. So I just wanted to do it to show, yeah, I could do this too. I know how to do this. I know how to make it good. So if you want to watch the YouTube channel, just type into the search engine, Cinema Macabre DD Reviews, Macabre being spelled M-A-C-A-B-R-E, Macabre or Macabre, as some people say it. But it's Cinema Macabre DD Reviews, and you'll see I've got some stuff posted on there. I did a video recently of a book signing I did in New York, and I was very happy with that. It's a nice little mini documentary about a book signing I did at Forbidden Planet, which is a really cool horror science fiction comic book store that's been around forever in the heart of Manhattan. Great, great, great place. Place I've been going to since I was a kid, so it's such an honor to be there and sign autographs of my book in the magazine, and we did it like 2 days before Halloween, and so it was a costume contest too. It was a lot of fun, so it's a pretty cool little video of that whole experience, which is nice. You know, it's nice to preserve certain moments in your life, certain little epiphanies.
Okay. Well, one thing I wanted to ask you, I know that you do all kinds of different things, but what's a movie that you've done recently? Like any kind of thing that you did for it, whether you directed, produced, or just did a voiceover.
Well, you know, I myself have not directed a movie. I've directed thousands of commercials, though, you know, which are basically little 30-second and 60-second movies, you know, so...
Oh, yeah.
You know, you have all... Huh?
Oh, I was just agreeing with you that they are movies.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, you watch and look at the way it is these days. People want everything done right away. I mean, you watch YouTube, and they try to sell you something in 5 seconds. I mean, it's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as I say, the attention span is ridiculous, but everything you do has got to basically, it used to anyway, used to have a beginning, a middle, and an end. You wanted to have all those things combined to create something that's, you know, a story, a 30-second story, a 60-second story. I mean, I've gotten to do documentaries now because the internet allows that, you know, and I have clients. I've done documentaries for clients about their products, you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, I've appeared in a lot of student films, you know,
student horror movies and things like that. You know, fun stuff, but nothing anybody's really going to see. But, you know, enough people see it and we have some fun, you know. But the main thing for me right now that I've concentrated on was the book. You know, I'm also very, very interested in cinema, discussing cinema. I love to talk about cinema. I love to talk about movies and, you know, sort of share some of that. So if you have any questions about that, I bet you I could fill the next half hour and then some just talking about movies.
Oh, yeah. I'm now fanatic about movies in general. Yeah. That's one of the reasons why I do this, have this show. Another reason is to help out my friends, because it's not always about movies, because I've had all kinds of different people on the show. I've had authors. I've had I almost said a congressman. It wasn't a congressman. It was a councilman from some part of New York. I can't think of which.
Well, that would have been a real riveting show.
Yeah. Oh, it actually was. In fact, it was one of my most watched episodes. He got like,
watched. It was video.
Of... Pardon me.
It was video.
No, it was on this. It was on this radio.
Oh, you said
show.
Most watched. You meant most listened to.
I meant most listened to.
Yeah, you said most watched. Well, you know, this is the first time I've done a podcast that's not video. You know, do you run this show on Spotify?
No, it's on Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, okay, that's cool. There's plenty of outlets. That's, you know.
Yeah, it's just over the internet. And I mainly do it this way with no video because, like they used to say in a lot of those old comedies, I have a face for radio.
Yeah, I get you. All right, well, you know, that's, you know, it's, you know, you never know. If you have that kind of face, you could have been more famous because you have that face, you know. These days, it doesn't matter what you look like.
Oh, I know. Oh, go ahead.
There's just so many outlets, so many... It's crazy. There are times when I sit and I'm scrolling through Instagram or TikTok or something, and I stop myself and go, what the fuck am I doing? This is ridiculous. I'm sitting here looking at this triangle and scrolling past things a mile a minute. If it doesn't capture my attention, goodbye. Doesn't capture my attention, goodbye. Doesn't capture my attention, goodbye. Captures my attention for 2 seconds, 3 seconds, 4 seconds. Goodbye. I mean, you know, it's just you know what I'm talking about, buddy. You know what I'm saying? And I say to myself, why am I doing this? This is ridiculous. Sit down and watch a fucking movie. What the hell are you doing? You know. But unfortunately, it's part of my business. I make YouTube videos. I make Instagram videos. I make TikTok videos. I do all this stuff because it's part of advertising. But, you know, when I'm sitting in my spare time, sometimes I do have to look because I obviously have to understand the medium in which I'm working and stuff. But it's amazing. It's just like there's nothing anymore for people to cherish and cultivate. And, you know, everything's so fucking fast. You know, we grew up, you said we're the same age. We grew up in an age where you had to wait for the Wizard of Oz to come on. You had to wait for the Charlie Brown Christmas, you know.
Yeah.
You had to wait for, Gone with the Wind. It was a major event. You had to wait till 8 o'clock to start watching All in the Family, and then you watch the Jeffersons, and then you watch Maud, and then you watch the Sanford and Son, or whatever, you know. I'm just saying that we come from we really, truly do come from a slower time. And at the time, we didn't know it was slow. It was all we knew. So we didn't make a judgment value and go, oh, this is slow. You know, I remember when VHS first came out, I thought it was a miracle. You mean I can record whatever the fuck I want and watch it back anytime I want?
Yeah,
oh, my God. Because
yeah.
in order for me to enjoy any show again, I would have to record it with my little Panasonic cassette deck. I had this little round hassock, and I pulled it up to our RCA, big giant RCA television, and I would put it up by the little speaker there, and I would record the shows, and I would listen back to them, and I'd see the visuals just by listening to it. And that's how I learned, like, so many lines from movies and so many different impressions and stuff, because I was always listening to these tapes, you know. Now, forget about it. It's absolutely insane. You know, it's absolutely insane. And that means, and I'm talking about everything, even right down to pornography, that pornography is in your pocket. You know, it's absolutely amazing. You know, people used to go, you know, Pee Wee Herman got arrested because he went into a porn theater. You know what I mean? Now forget about it, you know, and it's just crazy. I don't mean to talk about porn, but I'm just saying that's how wide the net is. It's a bottomless pit.
Yeah, it is.
You want to watch grannies. You want to watch grannies who like swinging naked upside down, covered in barbed wire, while Great Danes shit on them. You could find that video. Google it. Old ladies, barbed wire, Great Dane shit. And there it'll be.
I'm just laughing because it's true. That's why I'm laughing.
But think about it. But there are people that's what they did. That's what they grew up with. There are people walking this earth, Mac, that don't know anything else but that. They can't even conceive of the idea of there only being 8 channels. What are you kidding? There's 40 billion fucking channels.
When I was a kid, in the neighborhood, and this was a pretty big neighborhood, but in the neighborhood that I lived, nobody had UHF except for us. And so the really old Superman, you know, the one from the 50s, it was on UHF.
Yeah, the one with George Reeves.
Right. And we watched it all the time. And so I was real little, like maybe 5 or 6 years old, and I was going to school and telling the kids, I watched Superman last night. And then I got made fun of because they said, Superman's not on TV. And I said,
right,
yeah.
Right.
It's on UHF. There's no such thing as UHF. And I'm like, oh, boy.
Now you could type into Google Superman fucking a rhino. And it'll be.
Yep.
He went from Superman being on UHF to, you know, I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy. And it's too fast. It's too fast.
Yeah.
And there are people, and they don't know.
Well, you know, so there are some people that don't like it all that fast, and I'm not talking about just younger people. I mean, older people, because there's a lot of young people that don't like the modern day stuff. And how do I know that? Because
they're very few, my dear. They're very few because not even a matter of them making the judgment value. It's in their DNA. They were born with it. It's like breathing, you know. We've gotten to the point in our lives at our age, in our sixties, and that we know how important this stupid rectangle phone is, but we remember a time when you had no such thing. You didn't have to worry about walking around all day long with a rectangle that had your entire life on it, that everything you did was through this stupid fucking rectangle. You know, it's insane. I mean, I never ever thought that I'd be doing radio shows sitting in my living room talking and, you know, talking to my phone that would then be broadcast all, you know, I mean, it's nuts. And I'm not saying it's bad, but, you know, that's the other thing I like about the, you know, there are things that I do love about the modern age, you know. I'm not anti, but I definitely do feel that the younger people are losing out on something because there was really something magical about waiting.
Oh yeah, for a lot of things. Well, all I was saying was yes, they're used to it because that's how they've been living their lives, but they also, they want to slow things down. And I know that for a fact because I've had younger kids coming up to me and asking me stuff. My one niece, she was so cute. Great niece. I gave her a present and it was an old 8-track player.
Wow.
Of mine. Yeah, of mine.
Wow, an 8-track. Oh, my God.
Yeah. And I had some 8-track tapes to go with it. And
I thought 8-tracks were so cool.
Yeah, me too. Well, the thing is, what I was driving at is that, I was trying to show her that everything's not the way that it is now. It hasn't always been, but she didn't even look at it that way. I explained it to her later. But when she took it out, she said, "Oh, this is so cool." And she took it out. She says, "What do I do with it?" So I showed her what she did with it. And she's going, "Oh my God." She says, "This plays music. I didn't
know
anything like that." Yeah. It was so cute. And I said, "Well, I'm just showing you what I had when I was a kid."
I mean, I'm amazed that you had something that still works. That's very old. 8-tracks are old.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It still works,
actually,
too. Wow. That's very cool.
Yeah, actually, I take care of the stuff that I've got Beta, and that I won't give up. Well, for one reason is because a lot of the films that I have on Beta, that's the only thing that they ever put them on was Beta.
Right.
And,
that's very true. Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And there's
true.
A lot of, yeah. And there's a lot of VHS like that too. And for a while I was, oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Finish your thought.
Oh, anyway, all I was going to say was for a while I was selling some of the movies that I had because I have a great big giant collection. But there were some that I really didn't care that much about having, and I just got them because I had gotten them cheap. And so I was selling them, but I was selling them by way of having them as an auction. I didn't use eBay, though. I used Amazon auctions. And I made lots of money on my VHS and Betas. And the reason is
it's just like people wanting to collect vinyl. Yeah, it's antiquated. They like that.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of people like that. And some of them are younger people. Because one of the movies that I sold, and I had like a minimum amount. So, because there was no way I'm just going to give the thing away. But they went way, way above. I mean, people were bidding on that like crazy. And I
made give me an example of what
like,
you give me an example of the movie. What was the movie you sold, and how much did you make?
What was it? I'm trying to think. Oh, Twilight's Last Gleaming. Did you ever see that?
The Burt Lancaster film.
Yeah.
Okay.
And one of the reasons why it was so popular and everybody was bidding on it is because at that particular time. And I think it's still not very prominent because it went into a moratorium. But at the time I had it, that was the only way that it was available was on VHS. And they had already started with the DVDs and everything because even I had tons and tons of DVDs. But this was only on VHS. So I got, and this is going to sound crazy, but, it happens. All you need is to get somebody who's a real collector. I got almost $1,000 for that VHS.
Yeah, that's wacky because, I'm looking right now, and it's on Blu-ray, it's on DVD, it's on Prime Video. It's definitely more than available.
Yeah, that's now.
You know, you could buy the DVD for $17.99 for the DVD, $19.99 for the Blu-ray. Not bad, actually.
Yeah, at the time, though, because this was, now we're getting that echo. That's one of the things I hate about Blog Talk Radio. But at the time, it wasn't available at all anywhere. It wasn't even available on VHS, except for the people that already had it, like me.
Well, if you have echo, then let's just pretend we're in a cave. Mac! Mac, where are you? Mac, did you find the 8-track of Fleetwood Mac?
Well, since you like movies, and I know you really like horror movies, and so do I.
Well, I love all cinema. I'm a cinephile. I love all cinema, so I could talk to you about all movies. But yeah, horror movies, yes.
But well, me too. I love movies, and I'm a semi-professional movie reviewer. I've been published with my reviews, and
very good. Well, there you go. Good for you.
Thank you. One of my movie maker friends even put my review. Well, he used like one sentence because really my review wasn't that long, but he used like one sentence of what I had. Because he wanted me to watch this movie, and he's a French filmmaker. And by French, I mean, you know, totally French. He lives in France. He speaks only French. But luckily, I speak French as well, and so we can have an actual conversation. And he wanted me to review his film. And I said, well, sure. I said, but, you know, the thing is I need to see it. And the only way that he had for me to see it was by sending me the DVD. So he was going to send me the DVD, and he said, now, how do you want it? Do you want it dubbed, or do you want it with closed captioning? And I said, neither. And he was just so enamored with that, because he says, oh, I'm so glad. And then, can I ask you why? And I said, well, it's not that, I can't use captioning or anything like that. But when I speak the language that they're dubbing or that they're using a closed caption, it's too distracting, and plus it makes me mad because if I read the captioning, they're not putting on there what the person is saying. And I know that because I speak that language. And that's happened
in a
few movies that I've watched.
Yeah, I have no trouble. I have no trouble with subtitles. I like subtitles, but I do know that something gets lost in the translation with subtitles. That's why it's really great when a lot of the classic movies, foreign films and what have you, that have been reissued and stuff, many of them have redone the subtitles to be more reflective of, you know, what's being said, you know. I never had trouble with that, but I do love all cinema. I mean, I own about 4,000 movies.
Well, I probably have more than that, but that's okay. But well, the reason why I bring that up though, it's distracting to me because since I speak the language, I don't really need it.
Right.
I don't like dubbing either. Because the dubbing.
Oh, I hate dubbing. I hate dubbing. Although, even though I've done it, I've dubbed foreign films, so it's kind of fun. I've done dubbing, which I enjoyed it tremendously. It's a great art form, even though, you know, it's not as good as hearing it in the actual language itself. But anyway.
Oh well,
I don't like dubbing.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there. But as far as you know, the closed captioning, I don't really mind it either. And when it's like I can watch a movie, and sometimes they don't give you the option; they just have the closed captioning on there. But if it's an English speaking film, and not that I'm, you know, I care about whether they're speaking English or not, but if it's an English speaking film, I don't even care about that. I don't even glance at it. But the thing is it's just the way my mind works, because I know that the person who's doing that the captioning. They're
right.
doing it into English, and because I speak whatever language it is, I want to see if they're saying what they're saying. That's just the way my mind works. And so to me, it's too distracting. And especially
gotcha.
If I'm wanting to watch it the way that the person intended. And because he's a French filmmaker, he intends for people to watch it in French. And so he just was all enamored of that, but to try to cut it shorter. So, excuse me. So the thing is it wasn't really a great movie. And the way that I do reviews, I don't say, oh, well, this movie was terrible or this movie was whatever. I try to find what I liked about it, and then I'll embellish on that. And so when he asked me for my review, luckily he didn't ask me to go into details, because then I had to tell him what I didn't like about it. But I told him that it had the best special effects that I have seen in a long time, and that includes big budget movies. Visual effects, not special effects.
Did he agree
he
with
had
you?
Visual. Oh, well, it's not that he agreed or disagreed. He just was like, oh my God, thank you so much for that wonderful review. And it was just like two sentences. Some of the best visual effects I've seen in my life. And it was true, because that's another thing I don't do. I don't lie to somebody.
Right.
And
you're right.
I don't
you're
tell
right.
them what.
Well, it's not the worst movie I've ever seen.
Yeah. Well, I don't even say that, because that's like a left-handed compliment, and I don't do that. But what I have done with some people when they ask me to go into detail, I'll say, well, you know, it's not really my type of movie, but that doesn't mean that much, because it's my opinion. But this one friend of mine, I reviewed his movie, and he was my friend, was my friend for years. And he knew me, and I even said, if you want me to review your movie, you have to be sure you want me to do it, because, no, I'm not brutal, but I'll tell you what I think of it. So all I said to the guy was, and this really kills me, even to this day, because this was several years ago, but even to this day, it bothers me, because after all that, and he said, oh, yeah, I really want you to review it. And so after I gave him my review, he said, well, so you didn't like it? And I said, well, no, I didn't say that. All I'm saying is that it's not my kind of a movie. And he got mad
right.
at that one comment, and then he blocked me. And which, of course, unfriends me on Facebook. And then he got rid of me on all other media, too, just from that one comment.
Well,
which is
you know.
Ridiculous.
One of the things that happens to me a lot is the fact that because people know I review films, they want me to review their films. And because anybody mm-hmm. can make a film these days, you can make a movie with your phone. You know, directors like Steven Soderbergh have made an entire film. He made a movie recently called Bubble. He made the whole movie with his phone. But they all want me to review their movies. And I don't really want to, because if I go and I see a Hollywood-produced or a independently produced, if I go into a theater and I see a film, you know, that's going to see a movie. Somebody that did a movie that'll you'd be lucky if it makes it on YouTube and you want me to review it. It's not that I'm, you know, God bless you, make your movie, do it. But, you know, and I have great success with it. There's too many of them. And I'm always afraid that I'll look at it and I won't like it. Like there's this one guy, I'm not going to say his name, but a bunch of my horror-loving movie fans, friends, were saying, you know, that I should see this. It was a series of films. And again, I'm not going to say what they are, but, you know, and, you know, I happen to like all kinds of horror movies. You know, I like gory movies if they work. You know, I like a movie like Zombie or The Beyond or, you know, Dawn of the Dead or Day of the Dead or what. I mean, you know, there are movies that where gore and all that works. But, you know, there's other films that, you know, all they do is gore. You know, that all they care about is gore. And the thing is that sometimes people that don't understand my love of film, they think, well, Dennis likes horror movies, so he likes gore, you know, send him gore. No, I don't like gore for gore's sake. You know what I mean? If it's part of the story, then it's really, it could be exciting, it'd be cool. But anyhow, so this, you know, and I've seen a couple of extreme movies with gore that have been good. So they can be done, but it mostly not. And so this guy sent me these three films, which actually, you know, in some other reviews I've seen of them were, you know, got good reviews and stuff. And I just thought that they were an abomination. Like, it was like, who would want to spend their time sitting and watching this? Who wants to sit down and watch nonstop gore for no reason whatsoever? I mean, yeah, because you like to watch the special effects and all that. All right, but Jesus, come on. It's a hell of a lot more interesting when a story leads up to a gory scene or a special effect, or there are things that make you care about the characters, so it makes it even more horrifying because of what, I mean, whatever. But just, you know, gore for gore's sake. And I felt terrible because the guy sent me the films and I watched them, and I just didn't review them because I didn't want to say anything bad. He had so many people that loved them that I just was like, I'd rather not say anything than say how I feel, because if I said how I felt, you know, he would send out a hit squad.
Yeah, I, having had some of the reactions I've had, I know what you mean. But most of the time people are satisfied with what I say, because I do add that little nugget that that's just my opinion, and somebody else may watch it and love it. So who cares what I think?
But you know, people should know when they're reading a critical analysis, no matter what it is or who wrote it, that a critical analysis is that person's opinion. And, you know, you shouldn't, you know, as I often say, my thing is to say, why would anybody give a shit about what I have to say? But then if you do give a shit about what I have to say, realize that what I have to say is just my opinion. And I talk about things with tremendous passion and love for, I'm a fan writer. I'm not a, intellectual critic or, you know, critical analysis of, you know, I write about movies from the guttural effect they have on me. You know, my reviews are personal. I throw in facts and I make it professional so it looks like, so that, you know, when you're reading it, you know that the person that's, you know, writing it knows what they're talking about. They're not just talking like, I thought it sucked, you know, without any, you know, without anything to back it up. Why did you think it sucked? Just because I thought it sucked. You know, I mean, you know, that's how most people are, you know.
I know. Well, that's one reason why I get contracted a lot. But that's also the problem, though. When you get contracted for it, you have to actually watch it. And some of them are that bad that I really don't want to watch.
I've been lucky. I've had some quotes on movie posters, which I've been very, very proud of. When I write a review and somebody uses a quote and puts it on a poster, that's pretty cool. You know, I grew up seeing quotes on posters, so... Well, it looks like we're running out of time. I'm doing your job.
Well, yeah, we've only got like a minute left. So real quickly, tell people how they can get a hold of you for whatever reason they may want to get a hold of you.
Well, like I said, just you know, you give the information on how to get in contact with you because it's your show. And if anybody is interested, you could just text me and say, hey, Dennis, you know, just cut and paste what they say and say, I got this. This person's interested, and that would be lovely.
Okay. Well, most of the people that listen know that they can reach me on Facebook under Max Sherrill, and I'm the only one. So, and there you go.
All right,
anything
Matt. Well, great talking to you. Where can I listen to this?
Well, I'm going to
send me a link.
I'll be sending you a link, and it'll be the recorded version. But sometimes it can take a little while for the audio to come up.
Well, that's all right. Yeah, but we were live. I understand that we were live.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I'm going to go ahead and close out the show because Blog Talk Radio will cut you off in the middle of a sentence. So have a good night.
All right. You too. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Bye.